listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast. We are back at it again, 2 days in a row. It's Tuesday, July 22nd, and we are here again, less than 24 hours since we last spoke. As always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host and producer, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how are we feeling, man? What are we thinking? What are we saying?
I mean, we were talking about it a little bit before, but have had recruiting on the mind recently, you know, like Leonard Taylor, Jason Marshall, and exciting stuff, man. I'm looking forward to August.
But with all the recruiting, you know, crap that's going on, and it's not that I'm burnt out of it, but I'm just ready for actual football to be played. Like I'm ready for the season to start. And honestly, my mind changes every day, whether like we're going to play or not. I think I'm turning more towards like we're going to play just because of things I've read. And I don't, but yeah, it's an exciting time to be a Hurricanes fan, man. And hopefully that carries into the actual season and translates into wins.
Well, I mean, February to August are always the best times to be a Hurricanes fan, man. At least recently, you know.
And that sounds so sad.
Yeah, last year was the same thing, man. We were very, very hyped to be Hurricane fans from February to August. And then, you know, it ended up not being so great.
Yeah. I don't know. I keep saying it, and everyone keeps saying it, but this year feels different, and hopefully it just translates. But, I mean, we got basketball. I think, like, the first, like, exhibition starts tomorrow, and then opening day for baseball is Thursday. So just thank the Lord we have, like, actual sports in our lives again. And I'm ready to be hurt. I am 100% ready to be hurt by the Heat. I'm ready to be hurt by the Yankees. And then we got just the amount of emotional torment I'm preparing myself for with the Heat, Yankees, Cowboys, and Canes all within in the same season.
I've already mourned the Jazz being eliminated in round two or round one. You know, they lost Bojan Bogdanovic to a wrist injury, you know, during the quarantine thing or whatever, you know, shortly after the season got suspended, he decided to get wrist surgery. So I've already done my mourning for the end of the Jazz season. You know, I'm just going to enjoy watching them for, you know, hopefully they win in round one, but I'm thinking they're not going to get past round two in the playoffs.
Well, hey man, like there's always room on the heat train, man.
Yeah, I'm actually a huge Goran Dragic fan.
That makes one of us.
Yeah, I mean, like, even back to his Phoenix days, since his Phoenix days, he's been one of my favorite NBA players. So, you know, you guys have that going for you with as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But, you know, he's old now, so.
The dragon is getting a little bit old, but we got two great guests for you guys tonight. The train keeps rolling on the Fords Up podcast. So what do you say we get our first guest on the line?
Cool. I'll add him in right now. Andy, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, brother?
There we go. What's up?
Nothing much, man. So we now welcome on Andres or Andy Borregales. He's part of the Miami 2021 recruiting class. He's an All-American kicker at Chaminade Madonna in South Florida. His brother transferred to the Canes earlier this year from FIU. Andy, thank you so much for coming on, man. What's going on?
No problem. Thank you for inviting me.
So how you been doing with this whole COVID situation? How are you coping with it?
I mean, honestly, it's just going out to parks that I can. Just going out, kicking, just staying in shape. Pretty much.
Yeah, I hear you. I wish I could say the same. I'm not in shape anymore. But okay, so I want to ask this question right off the bat. You know, for Canes fans and everything like that, what's been your longest field goal as a kicker, whether it would be game or a practice?
Practice 65 and then game 56.
Wow.
All right. All right, man. We could almost end with you right there. Holy cow.
If we would have had you as an eighth grader, you would have been our best kicker in the last decade, man. I'm hoping your brother can give us some of that this season.
Oh, hey, trust me, he is.
When he played us last year, he hit everything. So I'm excited about that. Okay, so you verbally committed to Miami last June, I believe it was. What went into your decision in choosing the Canes in your hometown team?
I mean, you know, just growing up a Canes fan, plus my family, also being Canes fans, I just, like, once they offered me, I just felt it was right, and I decided to commit.
Hey, I love it, man. I love it. So, as a recruit, what's head coach Manny Diaz like when talking to him? Because, I mean, I've interviewed him, things like that, but when you're talking to him, like, one-on-one, what's Coach Diaz like?
He's basically, like, another recruit. Like, we laugh, we, like, make jokes, but he's a really fun person to just talk, be around. So.
Cool, man. So I have a question for you, and I want to preface it by saying, like, you know, we want to be respectful to the other schools that aren't Miami that are recruiting you here. But so what's it like, you know, getting courted by some of these big programs now? I mean, it's been in the news that we got North Carolina after you and you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, tell us about the experience of having all these big programs go after you.
I mean, like, if you would have told me that these schools were going to be recruiting me, like, when I was in eighth grade, I wouldn't really believe you. Because, like, usually kickers don't get recruited or offered till, like, after their senior season. Uh-huh. So, it's honestly a blessing. And, like, the experience, it's fun, but it's also overwhelming because I'm not used to it, obviously, and it's new to me.
Yeah.
So, but overall, it's a pretty fun experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I see it, and I saw that Max Preps or one of those media outlets named you as an All-American heading into this new season. What was that feeling like when you read your name on that list? And I mean, was it just a sense of accomplishment? And what was that like?
Definitely a sense of accomplishment because, that's pretty much like all across the country and they happened to choose me, which is a blessing again. Also, because I had a pretty good year last year. So,
what were your stats like last year for everyone listening?
I went 12 for 15 in field goals, longest being 56. I'm pretty sure I think I was like 80, somewhere in the 80s percent in touchbacks, and then 40 yard average in punt.
Okay, I mean, that's like music to Miami fans' ears, man. So you saw last year, you know, Miami struggled in the kicking game. Does that motivate you for when you do come to UM, or you know, like, does it just make you feel like, you know, you could have a real impact on the Hurricanes?
Definitely. Like, I could really have a big impact on the team. And, like, even though I don't wish bad on anyone, Bubba just, I honestly think he was just, it was all in his mind. Cause he's like, to me, I don't think he's a bad kicker. It was just his mindset wasn't in the right position at the time. But
yeah. And would you explain to us, you know, I've never been a kicker before. So would you explain to us in the audience, you know, that mental battle as a kicker, like how much of your success in your mind relies on your attitude or your focus during a game?
Almost everything. Like, your mindset is the number one thing you should keep right, I guess you can say, because if you miss a kick, you can't think about that kick for the rest of the game, because you might have another chance, maybe even a game-winning field goal. And you if you still have that one missed kick, in your mind, you're not going to have the confidence to kick your A ball and make the game winning field goal. So if you have the right mindset, you're going to, maybe they say you miss, and then, all right, just go back to the sideline, just let it go, and then just think about your next kick and see what you can, adjust and you, so you can make it.
I love that. And I think that's an important mindset to have, you know, in any position in any sport. Like if a quarterback throws an interception, you have to have that mindset to put it past you. And so I love that, man. I love that. When you were growing up and in recent years, has there been a kicker you've tried to emulate your game after or you really looked up to besides your
obviously my brother and obviously Justin Tucker.
Okay.
And also Harrison Butker. Those are my two favorite kickers.
Nice. Do you have a particular Canes kicker other than your brother? In you know, from recent memory, is there any that stuck out to you?
Probably not really.
Okay, I gotcha.
I mean, that's a fair answer because we've struggled at the position for a little bit, man. We can't. I mean, we're so excited to have your brother and then you coming on with your brother coming to Miami. What's it like to have that family connection to UM and knowing that, you know, he'll be there this year and that, you know, you can be our kicker in the future?
It's a great feeling because even like in high school, that was my brother's dream school. They just happened to not offer him and FIU did. And now he finally has the chance to play for UM and put that jersey on. So,
well, I mean, he basically, I mean, single-handedly beat us last year. So, I mean, that, like, hopefully yep. That got it through the coaches' heads that he's a pretty good kicker. So let's talk about the 2021 recruiting class. How close are you and the rest of the guys committed to Miami? Do you guys talk often, or what's the situation there?
I mean, most of the guys from Northwestern, I'm pretty good friends with them, especially, like, Khalil and all of them. And obviously Alan Hay, because that's my dog right there, and Thad, and then so I have a pretty good relationship with him.
And I know that a lot of people are going to know the answer to this next question, but are there any other guys you as a group are trying to, you know, bring on over to Miami for the 2021 class?
2021. Not really, but 2022, I'm trying to get Kenyatta Jackson and Jamal Johnson.
Okay.
So, trying to get both of them on board, you know?
Yeah. I think that's huge, man. Like because you see us now that with guys like Brinson committing and, you know, Kinchin's committing, they're trying to bring over their teammates and good friends. So, you know, I love that, brother. And so was it growing up in South Florida and even though they've struggled recently, what's it like and what was it like verbally committing to, you know, your hometown team like the University of Miami?
It was pretty much a dream come true, you know, because like it's my hometown team. Most of the fans already know me because of high school and all that, and having my name out there because of my season, and also my friends and family can go see me at games whenever they want.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you're fine, man. So I got a question for you. Do you and your brother talk fairly often? I mean, I know he's probably busy with school and stuff, but do you guys talk football pretty often?
Football, we don't really talk that much unless we're both like practicing together. Then we're like, okay. If I'm kicking bad, he'll like tell me what I'm doing wrong.
I got you. Because my question was, and maybe you don't have an answer for this, and that's fine. But I was just wondering if he's told you about the team at all this season. You know, I mean, obviously he's been he was there for spring camp and then just around the team since then. I was wondering if he's shared anything about how our season looks this upcoming year.
We haven't really talked about that, so I don't really have an answer.
No problem, man. No worries.
No, that's all good. So my last question for you, Andy, is if you had a message to give to Miami fans regarding the future of this program, what would you tell them?
Future's bright. That's all I'm gonna say.
Cool. Yep. Okay, man, so I'm gonna steal Marsh usually asks this question to people, but I'm gonna steal it from him because I love it. What is it? I mean, tell us what being a Miami Hurricane like means to you or has meant to you in terms of being a fan. And you know, if you choose the Canes, what will it mean to you when you're in college as well?
I mean, the Canes is just, there's a bunch of history and good history, bad history, but mostly good history. you know, it's a special place. And like in college wise, if I do choose Miami, it's just going to be special. Like, I don't know what else to say, because like my whole family can go see me. My lifelong friends can go see me play. And yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Andy. We really appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. It's always good chatting up with you. Looking forward to, you know, the rest of your recruiting process, and we just wish you nothing but the best. And, you know, you come from a great family. I remember about a month ago when we were on Zoom and your parents came in. It's clear you come from a very good family. So, yeah, Andy, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Anytime. All right, brother. Have a good one.
Yep, you too.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
Cool. Well, that was fun, man.
Yeah. Good kid, man. Really good kid. And yeah, like I was saying, like, so about a month ago, like he hopped on the big Zoom chat for Canes fans, and it was just cool to see his parents come in, and he just comes from a good family, and that speaks volumes.
Yep. I agree, man. It's it is cool. You know, I have a feeling that we're going to end up with him. You know, I didn't want to push him too hard on that kind of stuff while he was on with us. I think we're going to end up with him, but man, I'm nervous because we need him. You know, it would be a huge loss if he chose to go to UNC. So I'm really hoping that we can hang on to him.
Well, I mean, my jaw dropped because I know he hit a 56-yarder in a game last year, but when he said he hit a 65-yarder in practice –
yeah, we man.
We even hit a 25-yarder last year.
Yeah. Dude, we need him so bad. You know, it's amazing how, you know, the year that we had – oh, shoot. What was it, Fiegels and Spicer?
Oh.
Were those the two that were punting for us 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it was amazing how we had so many problems in the punting game. And then we get our dude from Australia. My mind is totally blank right now. I can't think of his name.
Lou Headley.
Yep, Lou Headley. You know, we get Lou Headley in. And, dude, I didn't hear a single complaint about our punting game last year. And it just goes to show how big of an impact that those guys have on a game.
No, absolutely. I mean, Headley, like I remember, I think it was like the Virginia game where Headley just, like, won us the game basically with the field position and everything like that. And then you look at our kicking game and you see how much we struggled. And just like you said, like, it's crazy when you sit back and think about the impact that, I mean, cause people always just take kickers for granted. But
yep.
When you look at last year, I mean, the Florida game, the UNC game, the Georgia Tech game, the Virginia Tech game, and then the FIU game where Andy's brother went like 4 for 4 or 5 for 5 against us. And I mean, Miami is looking at a completely different record if, you know, we were able to hit some of those kicks.
Yeah, dude, it's, I mean, having Jose and then Andy could really, really just change the fortune of this program for 5 years. You know, it's incredible how much, you know, every position matters, and kicker's a particularly important position.
Yeah, kickers are people too, man. Kickers are people too, right. man. And I don't think any program is was saying that louder than Miami after last year. I mean, you look back at the great teams in the early 2000s, and we had Todd Sievers, who, you know, won us a few of those games, and it just, man, it's such a difference maker. And hopefully we can, you know, we can have Andy stick with us. But it's, I mean, it's awesome to see. And you can't, like, he's getting offers from, like, UNC and things like that. You have to feel happy for him. And, like, if you're a 17-year-old kid, like, why wouldn't you go look at some other schools and things like that? So I think it's awesome that he's getting recognized. And because we were talking him up last year, you know, because he was hitting a 56-yarder and that he was already committed to us. But, I mean, you can't help but feel happy for a guy like that.
For sure, for sure. I hope I should have said it while he was on the interview. You know, I just didn't want random Twitter people to be upset at me that I was giving that advice. But you know, I wanted to tell Andy to listen to our interview yesterday with Derek Coe. How at the end, you know, how he was saying that Andy should take his visits and just experience all that stuff. You know, and just live up the attention that he's getting and the recognition and enjoy himself, because he's only going to get that recruiting experience once.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, we hope that it's Miami that he chooses. But yeah, that was a great interview. Dude, is our second guest ready to go?
Yeah, he is. Just give me one moment. Stefan, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are we feeling tonight?
Yo, what's going on, brother?
I can't complain, man. I got a belly full of rice and peas, a roast compollo. My wife just cooked for us, so I'm feeling good, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good, man. So yeah, Stefan is a fellow writer, just like myself, on State of You. A guy that I've really been able to get to know over the last month or so, and just long overdue for him coming on the show. So What's been going on, man? How you doing with this whole COVID thing and everything else like that?
Oh, man, just like the rest of the country, at least we should be kind of locked in, you know, hanging with the family, just really enjoying the time that we have together, because it's unprecedented, at least for our generation. So just kind of living it up and getting that family time going, but doing a lot of Canes reading and writing at the same time.
Hey, I love it, man. You've been grinding. So my first question is actually about your most recent article. So you wrote it about Jafari Harvey. We're doing these player profiles. And when I read that article, I didn't know that he had 4.5 40 speed. I didn't know all these things. And it really, I was excited about him, but now I'm even more excited about what he can do for the Canes. How do you see him fitting in, at least for the 2020 season?
Absolutely. I mean, for the upcoming season, obviously, he's not going to have the feature role, because you have Rousseau and you have Roche, I believe. I always get the name wrong. But those two are going to have the dominant roles in our defensive end rotation. However, Harvey is going to be that guy that comes in to spell them. And I think he should be in line for similar snaps that I want to say Rousseau got at the beginning of the season. Not necessarily the tail end when he came in for Patchen and kind of took over that role. But the beginning of the season, where he came in for about 20-25% of the game and was just that relief pitcher, came in and hit the offensive line when they were weak and got those sacks up and got the attention going. The same thing will apply to Jahari Farvey, because the kid is so dynamic. You read the article, he has the speed, he has the vert, which I appreciate more than the speed, because a vertical tells us your explosiveness. So that means his first step is going to be elite, his motor is going to be elite, and obviously the speed is there. So when you come in the second quarter and your defense is already humming and you're that next wave of just attacking, I think the sky's the limit for him this year and in the future.
So would you say it's safe to say that he is Miami's next big thing at defensive end once Rousseau and, you know, Roche leave? Obviously, you have Jalen Phillips, but, I mean, Jafari Harvey, you have to think you have him for this year and then hopefully 2 to 3 more years. Do you think that he could be that next big thing?
I believe so. I really do. What we have with him is something that's unique for this year for him, for Harvey, and also for Chance Williams, those two defensive ends have speed and athletic ability that we haven't seen since Olivier Vernon. And that was almost 10 years ago. And before that, we never really saw this athletic ability at defensive end, at least not documented. So what we're going to see as a preview this year with the whole group together and then kind of being let go next year as a starter, hopefully we are going to be in for a show. I'm so excited for Harvey because the kid just doesn't stop. That's the most important thing. He goes so hard. If you watch the film, if you listen to his interviews, if you listen to what the coaches are saying about him, he's a problem. They're saying the same thing about him as they did about Rousseau a couple springs back. So, you know, that's huge company to be in when it comes to the hype, the previews, and what we can expect from Harvey coming up.
Yeah, I didn't know that he had 4-5 speed either. And you make a great point about the vertical being more important. But just let it be known that I was taking a sip of Diet Mountain Dew and almost spit my drink everywhere. You know, that's completely shocking to me. And
yes.
And I am, dude, hearing you talk about that and considering that he could arguably be our fourth best defensive end this season.
Exactly.
Like, dude, my head is going to explode all over my bedroom right now. You know, like, I'm so excited to watch football this year. I mean, our pass rush is going to be so elite.
So elite.
Like, yeah, what? Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, go ahead, brother.
I don't know what an offensive coordinator or an offensive line coach can do to prepare seeing, just imagine the four big studs on the line at the same time. We've heard the NASCAR reference with Rousseau and Phillips in the middle, and then Roche and Harvey coming off the edges. How do you prepare for that? Like, what do you do as a coach to prepare for that?
Especially if Nesta is able to have a good year, they're going to have to run two tight end sets, like, a lot, mm-hmm. you know? And so they can double each of our edge guys and then, you know, have, you know, get help on Nesta if they need it. You know, if Nesta can have a good year, we will just be so completely unstoppable.
Absolutely.
But that's the big question for me is that we have so many studs at defensive end that, and I know we have Nesta, but our defensive tackles, I know we have solid guys there, yeah. but how, what are your feelings towards our defensive tackle rotation and just that unit as a whole?
Well, to be honest, and this kind of goes for Harvey too, because we haven't really seen, we haven't really seen much from Harvey or from the defensive tackle spot. We have Nesta, but we haven't really seen him because he's been hurt for a good portion of his time here. He had his freshman year where he wasn't really on the field, and then last year he was hurt. Ford is more of just a big guy in the middle that's going to – he's going to soak up tackles. He's going to soak up blocks and kind of let the rest of your defensive line work. With the guys behind them, with the Hollies, with the Hunts, with the Blissettes, we don't know what we're going to see. It's just like Harvey, where, you know, they have the physical ability. They're all two-sport athletes. They have speed. They have athleticism. But what will it look like together on the field? We can't really say for certain. We have to go off what we hear. But I'm excited for the future, especially what we heard about the big three that came in last recruiting cycle, the way Blake Baker has spoken about them. Hunt is a steal. I believe he was a 3-star coming out. It was us in Penn State for him, and he's a monster. He's huge. He's very, very underrated, kind of a sleeper on the defensive line. Blissett is the guy that is more the tweener. He's lost weight to be part of the defensive end rotation this year, so we should see more of him than the other guys this year. Then Holly is the guy that I'm sure everyone has seen. I know you guys watched the Pitt game last year or the FIU game, and he's the guy on the sideline doing the dances and getting the team excited, which I don't mind. He's a very high character, high motor guy, which really helps you play on the field as far as snap by snap, keeping the same level of intensity. So I'm excited for Holly as well. But we haven't seen anything. I mean, this is all talk. This is all hype. This is all just projections. But what we have seen from Nesta and Ford, I'm excited about. Jordan Miller, we haven't talked about yet. He was unsung when he came in as a signee late in the, I want to say 2018 or 2017 cycle. But he is very good at holding blocks. He's very good with his first step, and he gets into the backfield. So he might be the most unsung player on the line this year.
Yeah. And I've been – and a lot of people are high on Jordan Miller going into this year. And just like you said, with the three guys that came in last year as true freshmen, I've said it before in this show that when we were interviewing Coach Stroud after a fall camp practice, he said, these are the most talented freshman defensive mm-hmm. tackles I've ever coached. And so – but then it goes along with what you're saying is that we've heard all these things, but, I mean, it's – that's – been the story for Miami football the last 15 years that we hear so much about these guys, and it's more so can they produce. And so I don't know, defensive tackle is, and I know Jordan and I have talked about this a lot on this show, but defensive tackle is a position that I'm not worried about, but it's they need to have a big breakout year in 2020.
They really do. I mean, It's all for naught if they don't perform, if they don't produce. Like you said, we haven't seen them yet, but the pedigree is there. If you get so much talent in one place, something has to shake for you, right? One of these guys has to break out as the elite. I guess Robin to Roche and Nesta's and Russo's Batman, because they're going to be the lead guys. They'll be on the front, but somebody has to shake out of the back and say, hey, I'm going to step up when you guys are off. It's my turn to eat. It's my turn to come in and terrorize these centers, these guards, these tackles, and make their life a hell, you know? So we really need to see what they're going to do. I really do expect Miller to step up. Blissett is going to be kind of a tweener, so we may not see his potential until next year. But I do think Hunt is going to surprise if he gets the snaps. And it all depends on what the coaches want to do with him. It all depends if Ford and Nesta and Miller and who's in front of him are performing. So it's going to be a lot of give and take.
Yeah, definitely. But and since we're talking defensive tackles, let's talk about Leonard Taylor. So he's making his decision on August 6th. Today, how confident are you that Miami pulls this off?
You know, you mentioned it earlier with the 15 years of Miami and what we've grown to expect. I think in Miami, we've grown, at least our generation, with the cardiac canes, with the heartbreak canes, whatever you want to call them. And at some point, they always break your heart. And so it's hard to loosen that past when it comes to these newer elites that we're looking at and recruiting, especially with Leonard Taylor. And so you look at it and you're like, okay, he's coming. We're so excited. I mean, it's two teams. There's all this backstory, blah, blah, blah. Taylor's coming. But if you look at the Canes of yesteryear, past the greats, past the 03s and 04s, it's a crapshoot. Like it's a 50-50 in my head. I mean, I want to put an 8 out of 10 as far as confidence, but I'll say 5 out of 5 because especially with recruiting, anything's possible. But I would love to have Taylor on this squad. I mean, I think that guy is a transcendent talent. He is just elite across the board. And from all the things that I've read, he's a great kid, a good head on his shoulders. So that's the most important part. So that talent plus that mental ability, want him on the squad 100%.
Yeah, man. We couldn't ask for better timing with Florida to completely have the wheels come off their recruiting class. And, you know, I hope they're not able to recover in the next 2 weeks and make a run at Taylor. Cause you know, I know they've been on him for a long time and probably have good relationships with him. You know, all we can do is hope that Dan Mullen is still drinking mojitos on the beach and not recruiting.
doing his TikToks.
Yeah, right.
Jeez, it's something to be said about what's going on up there in Florida. I mean, I don't want to deter this into like a Florida kind of thing, but this is the second offseason in a row where they're having these weird struggles in the offseason, where they're having players transfer out, they're having issues with recruiting. I mean, it worked for them on the field last year, but you have to think these things catch up to you, right? I mean, kids start to talk. All these kids know each other. So the Taylors and the Avantes, the Walkers, all these kids know each other. I mean, they all play against each other in South Florida. They all have things to say about coaching staffs, and I don't think it's good right now for Florida.
Do you? I mean,
do you have any idea what is going on? I mean, I don't mind taking this to a Florida bashing episode. Yeah, I would love it, honestly.
I mean, we all hear things. We all have preconceived notions, but we can really just go off what we see and what we hear. And I mean, we know that there has been a coach that left there this past couple weeks. Can't remember his name right now, but it kind of feels like those things coincided. The hype with Miami and the Palmetto Crew, and him leaving UF, it kind of matches up. It makes you think: was this guy involved in their recruiting? Was he kind of the glue that was keeping them to the class? So that's one thing you can look at. I mean, I think Manny Diaz's resume also speaks for itself. I mean, whether you want to look at 6-7 or not, the guy can produce his defensive talent, I mean, across the board. So to play in his defense is no step down from Todd Grantham's defense. You're good either way as far as production. But yeah. Then, you have to wonder if, at Florida at least, if the wheels are coming off, if they're losing out because of the COVID situation. There's a lot of parts that are going into this decision-making for the kids down here.
Yeah, and so we heard a few weeks ago, and this is Leonard Taylor's commitment. We heard a few weeks ago that Mason Smith, a fellow 5-star defensive tackle, you know, said Manny Diaz's defense is like the best scheme that he's seen in college football for defensive tackles. He loved it. He said it definitely interested him. I don't think we get Mason Smith. But just the fact that these kids are recognizing that Manny Diaz's defense is perfect, for them and to boost their talent, their abilities, and, you know, their NFL potential, like, mm-hmm. That's something that could really work in our favor for the Leonard Taylor commitment. And hopefully, I mean, we really need some blue chippers at D tackle, man. Hopefully we can get some guys to step up and fill that void. But we really don't have any blue chip guys that we can lean on. Hopefully someone can turn themselves into that. But that's one of the few positions that we don't have like a rock in there, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's not that one guy that you turn to and say, that's the guy. Everyone has a role they play. Ford holds the blocks. Nesta's got the good feet, the motor. The kids behind him, they're all excited. And they're all hungry. But there isn't that Vince Wilfork. There isn't that Warren Sapp. There isn't that even that who am I thinking of? Jared Willis. Thank you. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. With the UF Miami talk, when he was in the middle, even the 2018 season when we weren't that good, he was still so exciting. You knew if there was one player on that line that would make a play, it was him. And other than Willis and McIntosh, to an extent, there really hasn't been that consistency, that go-to guy in the middle of the defensive line.
Well, yeah, and so I have an article coming out tomorrow about Leonard Taylor, and, you know, if it's a big recruit, then I write an article how Miami needs to land him. But but with Leonard Taylor, like, I think you hit it right on the head, and we've talked about this, you know, in our little group chat or whatever. But besides Willis, I mean, Miami has such a rich history of developing defensive tackles. You know, you got Jerome Brown, Warren Sapp, Wilfork, Cortez Kennedy. But besides Willis in 2018, just like you were saying, you haven't had that playmaker and that difference maker and that superstar at defensive tackle for a long time. And I mean, if Miami wants to get back into that national discussion, it's Taylor is that kind of guy. I mean, a lot of people know him just because he's a 5-star and this and that. But you watch the tape. I mean, the dude he is elite. I mean, he had 11 sacks last year, which you don't see from a defensive tackle.
Really?
And so, I want to get my hopes up about him coming to Miami, but I'm gonna keep it calm for right now. I wanted to ask you about another article you wrote a few weeks ago on why a resurgent Miami program is college football's quote unquote worst nightmare. Explain that and explain your reasoning behind that.
I mean, I think if Miami is a holistically relevant. I mean, we'll always be relevant. No matter what the haters say, we'll always be on the tip of someone's tongue, someone's mind. We'll always be prevalent in the conversation of college football. But holistically, when you talk about wins, you talk about on the field, you talk about rankings, you talk about recruiting players across the board. If we are back, college football cannot come down to South Florida to poach the best players. The James Williams, the Patrick Surtains, who I believe Patrick is on the list for top cornerback coming to the season. They can't come down here and get the Tyrek Stevensons, the players that are just the elites of college football. I mean, there was a point where down here it wasn't that elite, but we've gotten to a point in this process, this life of football, where South Florida is the mecca. I mean, you can point to Texas as being great. Georgia has quarterbacks. California has quarterbacks, receivers. But Miami has the entire landscape. And so I think recruiting would get locked down if Miami is a top five team year by year by year. Then you go into the national media. The national media, without sounding like an aluminum foil wearing conspiracy theorist, there's just this undertone when people talk about Miami. I mean, whether it's Kirk Herbstreit back in the day, even though he changed his tune in 2017, there's a lot of love for UM in 2017, or if it's Musburger, who I can tell you he hates Miami, or if it's Feinbaum, who finally got kicked off ESPN. Thank you. But it's just throughout the media, they just cannot stand Miami. However, if the team is legit, if they're in Alabama, because people don't like Alabama either, but if you're the team that's going to be at the top, people have no choice but to talk about you, but to say you are the favorite in this, that, or the other. And I think that would just burn so many people's lips to say that UM is back. I think it would be a nightmare scenario for the media. And then obviously for other teams, these kids now, I think with this class right here, you're seeing that the Miami stars are saying, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's probably about 25 of us that are pretty close to being top 4-star, 5-star players. Why are we going to Alabama? Why are we going to Clemson? Why are we going to Georgia when there's a school right here during all of this mess where we can't really travel that far? We have a situation. Why don't we just play together? And these kids are understanding now that the power that they have as a group together under their own roof is so much bigger than they could ever have somewhere else. And so to have that begin rolling downhill, to have a Leonard Taylor come aboard, to maybe down the line have a James Williams come aboard in the same class, then kids like a Jake Garcia take notice. They're like, you know what? They're legit. They're for real. I don't have to waste my breath anymore. I don't have to waste my time like coming across Twitter or whatever you want to call it. I can be legit and say, hey, let's go play the Canes. It changes the dynamic massively. So I think you're gonna see a big change in the landscape if Miami's back. You're going to see the SEC suffer. Obviously, the ACC would be ours for the taking, in my opinion. It would be massive, 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 massive.
You know, I couldn't agree more with you. I've said this before. I think, if we're back, we're going to have a really high floor, and it's for the exact reason that you just talked about. And that's the our backyard is the biggest recruiting hotbed in the whole country. And, you know, a lot of these kids want to stay home, but then they end up going elsewhere just because it's a smarter decision. I mean, I'm going to be honest, right? Even though I hate to say it, but in the past, going to Georgia, going to Florida, going to Alabama, going to Auburn, that's been a better business decision for these kids. And I don't blame them. But if we make Miami and staying home and representing their city and playing in front of their friends and family, if we make that the smart business decision, then it's not just going to be 10 wins every year. I don't think we'll ever be in that spot. I think Miami, just because of how the recruiting works, will always be a boom or bust program. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll probably have down periods like this in the future as well. But our highs are going to be very, very high, and it's just because of the saturation of talent, you know, in our backyard. We'll get all of these kids to, you know, stay home and play for us, and then we'll, you know, it'll create that competition that you hear about with the 2001 team and in all these great eras. Because I mean, what other culture can you have?
when you have a running backs room that has Portis and Gore and McGahee and Najee Davenport, mm-hmm. Of course those guys are going to be at each other's throat because all of them are going to be, pro bowlers.
Exactly.
You have to have that competition because that's the only way that you can stand out.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something to be said when you can look around the room that is your room, whether you're a linebacker or a defensive tackle or a running back, and say every one of these guys in this room is going to be in the NFL. The majority of these guys will be selected on day two. The majority will be selected on day one.
Yep.
The amount of, hey, I can do it too, the amount of responsibility, the amount of competition, iron sharpening iron, it is so important to surround yourself with like-minded individuals. That's a great statement in any walk of life. If you surround yourself with people that want to do what you want to do, you will be better for it. Because they'll make you stronger, they'll pick you up when you're down, they'll give you advice that you don't know, and vice versa. And so if you have a room with a Leonard Taylor, with a Nesta, with I believe the number one recruit next year, I cannot remember his name, I believe his name is Shamar, out of Miami next year for 2022, defensive tackle. If you have those kinds of kids in your room looking around and saying, we are all elites, you will have the competition that you need to make Warren Sapps, to make elite transcendent talents. But when you have rooms that are devoid of the talent, when it's maybe just one kid, a lot of kids that might be, what do you want to call it, projects that they come in as three stars, they have the size, may not have the ability, or they have the ability but not the size, and so they don't get there until their senior year. Well, a lot of these kids leave at their junior year, so they don't see the possibilities until it's in front of them. But if you have a bunch of this elite, apparently elite players together, it changes everything dynamically.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think something to go along with that is, because we've had talented players in the past 15 years, but I think, not enough attention is given to the assistant coaches that we've hired and what role they play. And so in your opinion, how would you grade – the recent hirings of Arett Lashley, Rob Likens, and Coach Justice?
Those three right there are some of the best hires I've seen at Miami since my time as a Canes fan. And that goes back to 2001. I became a Canes fan after all the hoopla, after all the good stuff. I was a fan, well, I should say 2003, during the Fiesta Bowl. That's when I became a Miami fan. So I never got the good stuff. And since then, I've never seen a group of individuals come in that have such good resumes, and the hires were thought out. I think when Diaz and Blake James looked at these names, they said to themselves, okay, Rhett Lashley, amazing talent, brilliant, young. That last word tells you he's going to be gone pretty soon. I'd love to have him, but he's going to be here for 1 or 2 years. He's going to get a big gig, whether it's Arkansas, his alma mater, if it's Auburn, where he kind of cut his teeth, or wherever, he's going to get a head coaching job because he deserves it. But so you say to yourself, okay, what do we need on the staff to make sure that we don't screw that up? Well, bring in a Garen Justice, who is another young talent who has great experience with the spread, who has offensive coordinating experience. That's an excellent hire. And that guy right there is a monster. Garen Justice might be the best hire of the offseason. And then behind him, you have Rob Likens, who has 20 plus years in the industry. He's that nice wisdom having figure in the room that can say, well, you know what, back when I was your age, we did it this way, but we screwed up. He can give you the advice. He can give you the scenarios that you may not see. So he's an excellent hire as well. He was an offensive coordinator, and he's putting wide receivers in the first round of the NFL draft. He's been with big programs pretty much his entire career. So they did an excellent job using foresight, using just intentionality behind these hires. I think all three are excellent. But when you talk about recruiting, I think the hire that kind of went under the radar, we talked about it way back when it went away and it came back this last week, was of the gentleman that just came over from Florida State.
Telly Lockett.
That man is, I think, with all these things that you're seeing with the Palmetto Five, with Northwestern, with these kids going from really zero to 100 with Miami, I can probably name about 10 kids that are either committed or involved with Miami that before he was hired, they were like, Miami's dead to us. We weren't in Taylor's top however many teams, Marshall, Collier, Mara Daniels. These kids were not looking at us. They were, I mean, a couple of them were kind of throwing shade a little bit. But Lockett comes in and all of a sudden that goes away. And we're back in the hunt for every big talent in South Florida. I think that's so huge. And his online presence is almost nil. The guy is not on social media. He's on the ground. He's working, which is amazing to me. I mean, I think in this day and age where kids are on Twitter, they're on Instagram, they're always on something. He's offline getting the work done. And I think that hire is so underappreciated, but so important for this recruiting cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you pair it with already Coach Hickson, who's doing work, and then Coach Field, who is just a monster in recruiting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love, I mean, this podcast is the Garen Justice fan club, but we love all those hires. So my last question for you, and Jordan has one, but my last question for you is, what are some of the things, because we've talked so much about the Rhett Lashley hire, but for you as someone who knows the game of football, what excites you? What are some of the things that excite you the most about what this offense will do for a team like Miami?
What excites me the most is what having a competent quarterback within a competent system will do to the visual of a Miami offense. We haven't had that in about 17 years. I wrote an article about that too. And we haven't had a good quarterback, a good offensive coordinator, and a good system in 17 years, all at the same time. Ugh. Which is mind-numbing. I mean, it shouldn't take that long to have competency at two of the most important positions in football. But to have a Lashley and to have a King in the same place at the same time, I think it's going to do wonders. We have so much disdain in our fan base for our skill positions not named Brevin Jordan, to be honest with you. I mean, everyone sees Brevin, they see his talent just oozes, and so it's so easy to love him. But then you get to the receivers, and they don't put the numbers up that everyone wants to see, so they say to themselves, oh my goodness, our wide receiver room is just devoid of talent. No, it's devoid of talent at the quarterback position. It's devoid of leadership at the offensive coordinator and wide receiver coach position. There's no leadership on this team as of 2019. So I think bringing those guys in is going to be electrifying. I mean, what we saw with Auburn, with Nick Marshall and Trey Mason, when those two both had 1,000 yards rushing with a quarterback and a running back, or what you saw last year at SMU, where a traveling quarterback, Shane, I believe, was it Bushley? I always get his name wrong. Transferred from Texas, was kind of an afterthought. He put up amazing numbers in a system. So you have a Derek King who's an electric player, reminds me of Russell Wilson a little bit, with it, his size, his ability to make plays and to look downfield. It's gonna be a highlight reel every single game. At least it should be. I mean, this is all hype and projections, but it on paper and everything that we have seen, it should be an amazing season to watch. And of course, we can't be there in the stadium to watch these amazing games, but I'm happy that we have it at least on TV, hopefully.
Yeah. So, I mean, my last question for you is I want to know, as it stands, and we're going to have to extrapolate a little bit. So we have to replace Michigan State. We're going to call that game a win. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just going to assume that we put like FAMU or FIU. That's a joke.
I hope so. I would love to put a whoop down on that damn team.
Yeah. So we're just gonna assume that game is a win. Where do you see what do you see our record being at the end of the year?
Oh boy.
Oh man. So everyone knows me as sort of a sunshine guy. I like to be happy. I like to be positive about these projections, but I'm trying to be as on point as possible. I'm going to say we have 10 games. Like, It's all tip of my tongue to say 10-0. It really is, because I think North Carolina is going to.
Oh, man.
I think North Carolina, they're going to pull a Virginia. I mean, Virginia was the team going into last season, right? And everyone was like, oh, my God, Virginia. North Carolina is losing more talent than people know. Like, they're losing their left tackle. They're losing their center. They're losing receivers. They're losing players on that team that matter. So I'm not really worried about North Carolina. Wake Forest is a team, but I think we could beat them. I mean, if you want to add the Miami of the last 15 years, then it probably would be more of a 9-1, 8-2 season. But when there's so many things aligning that haven't been here over that entire time frame, I can't say anything about 10-0.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
I can't. I can't. Oh,
Lord.
I can't.
Oh, no. Edit that out. Yeah, what a great way to end it. Oh, man.
You got to go out with a bang.
Oh, jeez. I love it, though, man. It has me excited, but also scared.
Absolutely. But I think that this season, so much different from years past, is that we actually have more substance this season to be excited about. Like, I mean, just like we've hit on so many times, like, we can say, like, oh, we said the same thing last year and the year before, but, like, there was still that question mark at the quarterback position. Like, we didn't know that Danny, you know, or excuse me, our former offensive coordinator would turn out to be the guy he was. And there were so many question marks that have been answered over this offseason. So I'm not going to say 10-0, but I understand the optimism. And for, like, those who say, oh, it's just like last year, the year before, I would say, no, I'd say you're totally wrong. Yeah, like, right. I can't stand people who say that, because if you say that, then you really haven't done your homework and you haven't really dug deep to what this team is all about and what they're bringing to the table this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. And, you know, if someone would have told me before last season, like, hey, Jaren Williams is going to be at a community college in 12 months, I wouldn't have been very excited. So.
Or surprised. But I mean, that's another story.
Yeah,
well, that is another story.
I knew by like week three, man. I was very pessimistic all of last year.
Oh my gosh.
I will admit, I did get hyped, you know, when we were talking about Alabama and the Orange Bowl. I was on that train, and then we lost by two.
I tell you what, I was high on Jaren. I remember meeting him at a game day in 2017. I met him and Russo, and I was like, boy, these kids are gonna be changers for this team. I was 1-2 for that statement. So,
yeah. I mean, all the talent in the world. I, you know, it really wouldn't surprise me to see Jaren pop up at a team like, I mean, I don't know, like Arkansas or something, and have a really good year for them. So, I mean, he's not a bad quarterback. It was just the whole situation around him was terrible.
Oh yeah, it'd be a great story for him to go back to Kentucky, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I honestly
like I'm rooting for the kid. I mean, because you never want to see, because I always bring up the argument, like, I mean, yeah, we have to realize and remember that these are 19, 20 year old kids. And Jaren, like, yeah, he made some mistakes, but like that dude, like, had some serious, serious talent. So yeah. I'm rooting for him, man. And I really hope that he makes, like, he turns it around, and because he has the talent to do so, man. He showed some flashes last year that I was like, dang, like we got a guy for the next few years.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, I hope he proves us wrong. I hope in 4 years we're looking back at this and he's getting selected in day two on the draft and he's just having a good career. I just need to see him put it together.
Yeah, I'm a little saltier than you two. I'm not wishing ill upon him or his career. You know, I don't hope that he like stays in community college forever. But I think I just need to block him out of my mind, because I'd be very salty if he did end up being like an all-conference QB somewhere. I'd be salty about that.
Yeah.
So I'm not cheering against him, but I need to remove him from my consciousness.
We can just blame the offensive coordinator that won't be named. We'll blame him for that transgression.
Yes, 100%. That is the truest thing that has been said all day. But hey, brother, thank you so, so much for coming on. You are welcome on the show anytime you want. Yeah, hope the family's doing good and love the work that you're doing for State of the U. And thank you again for coming on, bro.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. It's always all love. Always a pleasure, guys. Go Canes.
Yep.
Go Canes, brother.
Canes, man. Cool, man.
That was good. That was awesome. He is a good dude.
Yeah, he is. He's you know, it's only been in the last month or so that I've gotten to know him, and really it's been a great time getting to know him a little better. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the work he's doing for State of the U. I mean, the guy just churns out content and like he's just a good dude. Like, and I'm like, and I know we were talking like before this episode that like, man, we're just exhausted going into today's episode. But honestly, like that was a really, really good time. Andy was great. Stefan was great. And yeah, I'm just one of those episodes because it's happened so many times before where we're just tired going into an episode and then it just turns out to be a great show. So.
And speaking of that, I want to give one PSA to Canes fans. And I want to preface this by saying that, you know, I am extremely nervous about Andy choosing somewhere else, you know, and that's because we need him so bad. It's not because any info that I have.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the tea leaves, everything points towards him coming to Miami, and I'm excited for that. But we really need to lay off of him and let him just enjoy this experience. You know, I was having a hard time until yesterday when Ko was talking on our show. But, you know, it kind of clicked for me. I'm like, yeah, Ko's 100% right. You know, we need to let Andy enjoy this recruiting experience and not, you know, be on him too much about making sure he's choosing Miami. Because, you know, at the end of the day, he'll do what's right for him. And who's to say what that is. But, you know, in my heart, I have a good feeling that he's going to be a Cane. So,
yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And at least for the next year, we have his brother. So it's awesome. But, yeah, thank you to him and also Steven for coming on or Stefan, excuse me. But, yeah, other than that, like may throw in another show at the end of the week. But besides that, things are going good. Like I said, big things are coming for Fours Up. We're working towards it. It's a lot slower process than we anticipated, and there's a lot more stuff that goes into it. But I'm excited about the future, man.
Me too, man. Good things ahead. So hopefully, yeah, man, and hopefully some tailgates this year, right?
Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah. Hell yeah. That's all I want. I just like first of all, like I just want football, but like. And I know that we can't tailgate at Hard Rock, but hell, like we could have a big tailgate at my Florida house. Like,
did they cancel tailgating?
Well, I think they canceled it for the Dolphins game, so I'm assuming they play the same stadium. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but that just means that the 2021 tailgates will be Animal House like.
Oh yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, till next time, go Canes as always.
Go Canes, man.
This has been the Fours Up Podcast.